KXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Michael Wallace. President Trump's tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports have taken effect today. Other countries are firing back.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen saying two can play at that game.
As the United States are applying tariffs worth $28 billion, we are responding with countermeasures worth 26 billion euros.
American bourbon, jeans, and Harley-Davidson motorcycles facing tariffs of up to 50%. Cosmetics, clothes, wood, soybeans, chicken, beef, and other agricultural produce may also be included. The EU tariffs take effect next month, leaving some time for negotiations if Washington wants that. Vicki Barker, CBS News, London.
The Education Department plans to cut more than 1,300 jobs, almost half its staff. Education Secretary Linda McMahon tells Fox.
We wanted to make sure that we kept all of the right people, the good people, to make sure that the outward-facing programs, the grants, the appropriations that come from Congress, all of that are being met. And none of that's going to fall through the cracks.
Washington Democratic Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal isn't convinced.
I have enormous concerns. This is a very important department that provides education services to millions of people across this country.
President Trump has said he wants to eliminate the education department. The spending bill to avert a government shutdown this weekend is now up to the Senate. The House passed it yesterday. Here's House Speaker Mike Johnson.
I hope there are at least a number of Democrats in the Senate who will do the right thing. If not, this will be on their shoulders.
An organizer of pro-Palestinian protests at Columbia University will be in court today. ICE arrested Mahmoud Khalil, and President Trump has threatened to deport him. More from CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum.
Khalil's green card grants him permanent residency, and so he is entitled to some constitutional protections, but arguably not as much as an actual American citizen.
Police in the Dominican Republic have named a person of interest in the case of Sudiksha Konanki, the University of Pittsburgh student who went missing while on spring break. He is 24-year-old Joshua Reeb. CBS's Manuel Bojorquez has the latest.
A Dominican police source tells CBS News Konanki and the other women she was traveling with went to the beach with two American men. Her friends returned to the hotel, while Konanki and one of the men stayed behind. Later video appears to show him returning alone.
Billy Joel is postponing his concert tour.
What's the matter with the car I'm driving?
The 75-year-old rocker will stay off the road until at least July so he can recover from surgery for an undisclosed medical condition. Joel says his health must come first. S&P futures up 36 this morning. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Brittany Merlot with WXCO News. Your news in depth. Find it in the news section on the WXCO website at BullFallsRadio.com.
The Bucks lose in Indy. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Bucks against the Pacers. Just over 3 seconds left when Oshkosh native Tyrese Halliburton makes a clutch three-point shot and draws a foul to win the game. Brian Anderson on TNT.
Pacers down three. Halliburton's got the ball. Halliburton rises up.
The Bucks lose 115-114. Doc Rivers says nobody covered Halliburton.
He was open the whole play, and we'll have to figure it out because that's a play that should never happen.
So the Bucks have lost three in a row. They host the Lakers tomorrow night. Junior Bridgman has died. He collapsed from a heart attack while speaking at a Boy Scouts luncheon in Louisville. Bridgman played 9 seasons for the Bucks before becoming a billionaire businessman and part owner of the team. John McLaughlin was one of his teammates.
The finest person I've ever known in my life. Just class guy.
Junior Bridgman was 71. With sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Duchess of Sussex, also known as Meghan Markle, has taken a lot of verbal and tabloid abuse for her show, I Really Wish I Was Martha Stewart, a.k.a. With Love, Meghan. Critics don't like it, and according to Rotten Tomatoes, only 20% of audiences like it. Having said that, the show has been renewed for season 2, and according to the New York Post, the crew absolutely loves her and said she treats everyone wonderfully. Why wouldn't she? She's a duchess with a horrible hit TV show. I can't think of anyone luckier. Mr. Scarlett Johansson, a.k.a. Colin Jost, was roasted on Saturday Night Live during Weekend Update by Lady Gaga's fictional husband, Lord Gaga, played by Mikey Day, who went on and on about how horrible it must be to live with a woman who makes so much more money than her husband. According to the Post, Colin Jost muscles through life with a net worth of just $10 million, and his wife Scarlett Johansson is worth $165 million. Somehow, they managed to make it work. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabo, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Partly cloudy and warmer today. We'll get to around 51 for a high this afternoon. The wind, southeast at 5 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy, 29. Tomorrow, 60. By Friday, partly cloudy, 65. With rain Saturday, rain changing to snow Saturday night into Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now, 30.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, a preview of the Wisconsin Supreme Court debate with Matt Rothschild and Angela Lang filling in. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
I hope you didn't hear all that clunking around just now. As the open is playing, I'm realizing, oh wait, I left my coffee in the kitchen and had to push my chair away and go get it. But here, back and caffeinated on Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom, carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is just about 7:07 now on this Wednesday morning, March 12th, 2025. Tonight, we will be having our first ever Up North News live event, Protecting Justice for All. That'll be at the Overture Center in Madison and broadcast here across the Civic Media Radio Network, starting just after the 5 o'clock news this evening. So from 5 until 7, we will have panelists including Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area and Civic Media's political editor, and Todd Alba of the conveniently named Todd Alba Show will be joining me as co-moderators for three different panel discussions, lots of lawmakers and experts talking about the various fields that could be impacted depending on the outcome of the April 1st election. So if you can't join us at the Overture Center this evening from 5 to 7, tune in to Civic Media and catch our broadcast of today's events. We'd love to have you tune in. If you'd like to join the show along the way, our phone number is 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We always welcome your text to that number as well, or use the Civic Media app, or put something in the comment section on Facebook or YouTube, as Robin Tigerton does on a regular basis, where he says today, good morning from Tigerton. It's partly cloudy and 29 degrees. Despite that it was 20 degrees cooler yesterday, it was another nice day. 46 for a high, went for a walk in New London. Todd, the mechanic, is still working on my truck, Old Beast. He also maintains the school buses for the Tigerton and Wittenberg-Burnhamwood school districts and thanks all of the mechanics that do the work to maintain our vehicles and keep them operating. So a nice day for a walk, he says, as we welcome in Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot. And I have to agree, even though it was much cooler yesterday, still pleasant enough that you could step outside now and then and wait a minute. Brittany's got on a hoodie here, and it just says across the top, I am the storm. Yep. It's like the old weather balls and the weather lights, you know, that buildings used to have. If the light is a certain color, that's the weather that's on the way. Brittany has a hoodie that says, I am the storm. This can't be good. What do you got, Brittany?
Oh, goodness. Our first potentially strong to severe storms are going to be moving through the state on Friday.
Yikes.
So we're going to be talking about that right now because the warmth and the sunshine is just abundant as we go through the day today, even into tomorrow. Things really start to change on Friday. But before we get to that, it will be sunny south throughout the day today. More clouds north. We will rise to those low to mid 50s. A few places will hit the upper 50s. And don't forget that we have a high fire danger. We have those conditions from anywhere from Chippewa Valley down to Madison and then westward. So avoid burning. Be careful. Don't toss your cigarette butt because we've got this dry, dead vegetation everywhere, these warmer temperatures, dry dew points too. And it's also making it feel very comfortable. Tomorrow we're going to get even warmer into the low 60s across the area. It's going to be partly cloudy, becoming breezy, especially as we go into Friday. Now, Friday, it looks nice temperature-wise. Mid to upper 60s, some 70 degrees going to be hit. That sounds fantastic, but it's not going to look great. It's actually going to be an overcast, cloudy day with some spotty sprinkles in the afternoon. And then by the evening, looking at these strong to severe storms rolling in along a line. This wants to push into the state around 9 o'clock and then throughout the overnight hours. And this could bring some damaging wind gusts, some hail, and possibly a weak tornado or two could spin up in this line. So right now, the Storm Prediction Center does have southeastern and a little bit of southwestern parts of the state in a slight risk for these storms to turn severe. So a lot of meteorologists are keeping our eye on this exact storm that moves through Friday night. I just want to give you guys a heads up. We'll keep tracking that for you. But that system does flip to just rain on Saturday and some snow on Sunday, too. So it's a beast.
I will say again, it was 1 week ago today that a winter storm had socked in a bunch of folks and required, you know, snow shoveling and plowing and everything. And now it's already severe weather season. Don't blink. You'll miss the change of seasons around here.
You sure will.
All right, Brittany, thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too.
We were speaking in the last hour about the launch of a congressional campaign here in western and parts of central Wisconsin in the 3rd Congressional District, even though Derek Van Orden is only 7 weeks into his second term. He and Donald Trump and Elon Musk have shown enough people who they are that they've already started to encourage candidates to consider or announce running. We mentioned that Emily Berge, the Eau Claire City Council president, is considering a run, but wants to wait until after the April 1st Supreme Court election to make a final decision or announcement. Rebecca Cook is not waiting for that and is jumping into the race right away, did so officially yesterday. Did so on a farm just a stone's throw from here outside of Chippewa Falls. So I went over and talked to her a bit, covered her announcement. We played a clip of it earlier. We may play that back again a little later this hour. But the clip I want to play from you now is with my interview with her after the announcement, where I simply asked her about the tariffs. And look, even I would be hard-pressed as somebody that follows the news closely. I would be hard-pressed to tell you what tariffs are in play and which ones are in not right now because, it appears that the president flips and flops and goes, you know, back and forth unlike anything we've ever seen before in terms of threatening tariffs or imposing tariffs or rolling them back or rolling back the threat or pushing the, you know, delaying that, whatever the case may be. Maybe it's fine for him for politics. It's not good for farmers or anybody else in Wisconsin agriculture. And Becca Cook told me it's just the fact that Derek Van Orden doesn't say boo about it shows a certain disconnect with Wisconsin agriculture.
I think that we need to remove the tariffs. I think they're harmful. I think, you know, I'm speaking on a family farm today, and I know that farmers want to have positive relationships with their allies, right, with our trade allies, because that's critically important for us to be able to do business. And I think the tariffs have made it harder and harder for farmers and folks to be able to do work and to do business. Trade. So it tells me that he doesn't have a deep understanding of agriculture, though he touts himself to be the cheese king of Wisconsin. He's not actually in touch with what farming families need and what farming businesses need to expand their markets and their businesses.
So there's Becca Cook getting involved. And as I'm looking at the wires here, I see the latest is that Europe is now retaliating against Trump's global tariffs on steel and aluminum. The European Union now says it will impose up to $28 billion in levies on U.S. goods and simply adds to the turmoil surrounding the global economy. The European Union plans to institute tariffs in two phases. The first one on April 1st, it will affect things like bourbon and boats and motorcycles. For certain products like Harley-Davidson motorcycles from Wisconsin, those tariffs could be as much as a crushing 50%. There is There is nobody in economic circles that will tell you credibly that there is a way out of this that makes the U.S. come out as winners. And we know this because we saw it in Donald Trump's first term with agriculture. We saw that in the end, they kissed and made up to a degree, but people don't appreciate the fact that the only thing that kept farmers afloat during that time was a government check after government check after government check, tens of billions of dollars that were added to the deficit. So what did we really gain from it when all was said and done? You'd be hard-pressed to say. But again, it enables the president to be a monarch in the sense that he doesn't need Congress to, they can't essentially block him. He can put these things in place as any monarch, dictator, authoritarian would, based on his own personal whims. The same thing that he's currently doing with the United States government and spending, turning it into his own personal slush fund, deciding which things will get money, which things will not get money, and the terrible impact that it, again, is having in Wisconsin. So what are Wisconsin Republicans saying about it? Obviously not much from the congressional delegation, which is what prompted Becca Cook's announcement yesterday. And meanwhile, over in the Wisconsin legislature, you have Republicans there saying, you know, hold my beer. I too want to get involved in this game. For Trump and for Elon Musk, they use the term DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. It's not an actual department. It's not a thing. It's not an official thing. And it's certainly not about efficiency, given what it's already done to decimate services, and it's going to increase costs for so many people. And yet, Wisconsin Republicans are trying to launch their own version of this, calling it the GOAT Committee, standing for Government Operations Accountability and Transparency. It is, to be clear, much more constrained in its mandate and its powers than what Trump and Musk are doing. The committee is bipartisan in the sense that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss made 3 Democratic appointments to the committee, along with 6 Republicans. There is no counterpart committee in the state Senate, and so that makes it even less likely that any of its recommendations will clear both houses of the legislature and get the governor's signature. But I don't think that's necessarily the point. As we've already found from one of the members of the committee, Shea Sortwell of Two Rivers, who on his own has been writing to municipalities and asking about DEI programs. That's their idea of government efficiency, accountability, is to simply go after the things that they don't like, much like Trump and Musk are doing on spending. There's nothing here that would strike anybody as a bipartisan effort to identify actual waste. It is simply politicizing government for their own purposes. We'll follow the hearings as they go through, but obviously, unlike Trump and Musk, where these cuts are taking effect right away, well, at least until courts reverse them, we won't see anything nearly that dramatic in Madison. But the point remains this. In both Washington and in Madison, there are real problems to address. There's a real need to fix the tax system at the federal government level. There's a real need to properly take care of a $4 billion surplus at the state level. But if you're spending your time firing veterans and going after DEI because you want to fight, what do you keep calling it, wokeism, it tells me you're not interested in solving the real problems that voters truly, earnestly want you to get to work on. We'll have more after this. This is Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is Bull Falls Radio, WXCO.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding, just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Tom from Monona. I love this one. He says, this is Tom. I like to rub my feet together and drink milk out of the cow. Listen, we'd all spoon ourselves if we could, just for some affection. But rubbing your feet together, as I mentioned last week, is the closest thing to self-cuddling. It's just a relaxing, and Tom wants to do that, apparently laying under the udder of a cow. That is the idea of a chill evening on Fat Tuesday.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO, home of the Chad Holmes Show.
Pretty good acoustic guitar intro as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, James Taylor, you win the day.
Yep. James Taylor turned 77 years old today. Wisconsin men's basketball team, the Badger men's basketball team, is in the Big Conference Tournament, and you can catch that coverage tomorrow starting at 12:30 on WLAK in Ambry, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WRCE in Richland Center, and I would assume the Civic Media app as well. Marquette's in the Big East Conference Tournament starting tomorrow. Tomorrow, the Milwaukee Bucks will host the LA Lakers. The Bucks lost in Indiana last night on a crazy last play of the game. The Pacers were down by three. They managed to score four at the end of the game and hang on for a victory. The Bucks family is also mourning the loss of Junior Bridgman, who suffered a medical emergency at a Louisville hotel yesterday and died at the age of 71. Bridgman first came to the Bucks in the right after the 1975 draft. He was actually drafted by the LA Lakers, but then they sent him to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee sent Kareem Abdul-Jabbar to the Lakers. Bridgman's 711 games played for Milwaukee ranks third in franchise history behind Giannis Antetokounmpo and Chris Middleton. His number two jersey was retired by the Bucks in 1988. Again, Junior Bridgman was 71 years old. A couple more notes about these cost-cutting measures that I guess you could call. I'm always hesitant to call them cost-cutting measures because they're not. They are full-on attacks on vital government services by people who believe that such services should all be done by the for-profit private sector, that we should be taking just about every service like the postal service and privatizing it and letting it charge you rather than your taxes being used to provide vital services like, you know, healthcare for veterans. Well, anyway, at the state level, there are a couple of Democrats who have introduced bills that are designed to perhaps blunt some of the impact of what Trump and Musk are doing. Quite simply, it's about introducing bills that would use the state's rainy day fund as a backup if the federal government decided to stop providing funding to the state in certain areas. A draft of the legislation was circulated last week and showed how the state's rainy day fund could be used to reimburse school districts and local governments and nonprofits if federal funding is halted. Obviously, with all of the many federal employees that have been fired, at least temporarily, and all the grant funding that has been halted, there certainly would be some breathing room for some of those entities, people, and missions if the legislature were to, as the bill calls, convene an extraordinary session to estimate how much federal aid would be halted and then provide payments to stabilize those budgets and prioritize funding for essential services. Now, we've talked a lot about the state's budget surplus of about $4 billion. But then there's also the rainy day fund, which has an additional $2 billion in it. Now, to be clear, none of that comes close to making up for the entire $28 billion in federal funding that Wisconsin gets over the 2 years of a state budget. But as Senator Chris Larson told the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, it's not something that any of us wants to be doing, but it is to come out and say that if the feds open up this trap door, the state will step in to the extent that we're able to make sure people are protected until a long-term solution can be sorted out. The legislation was introduced not only by Larson, but by State Representative Christian Phelps, a new legislator from the Eau Claire area, and Representative Angelina Cruz of the Racine area. Phelps acknowledged to the Journal Sentinel that the bill was intended to make a point. It's not going to pass a Republican-led legislature, but it's to make a point that Wisconsin Republicans have been silent. They have not pushed back on Donald Trump as well. Phelps said the introduction of this bill is to respond to the fact that we haven't really seen comments or actions from Republican leadership so far, and to call on them to join us in finally responding. Well, that's not going to happen because we've seen something in our fairly recent past that informs this, and it was the COVID-19 pandemic. It was 5 years ago this week that the pandemic truly became real here in Wisconsin. I'm sure a lot of people will be talking about it next Monday because it was on St. Patrick's Day. It was that afternoon that the shutdown order came for bars and restaurants and other places as this new mysterious deadly illness started to take root in this part of the world and would go on to kill more than 1 million Americans. Well, the legislature had been meeting and then put itself on a paid vacation for 9 months, as has become the Republican legislature's habit, and never came back into session for the rest of 2020 as people were losing their jobs, as people were losing their lives, as hospitals were strapped like never before, as essential workers were getting sick and dying in waves. This state had a rainy day fund that it could have used. What is a rainy day fund good for if you're not going to use it during a global pandemic to try to keep people alive and employed and educated? What are you doing with it then? This legislature, led by Republicans back in 2020, didn't do a damn thing with the rainy day fund as it existed. And it has only grown since then. And there's a $4 billion state surplus. And we've been talking about this for quite a long time now, a multi-billion dollar surplus. But Republicans have continued to just sit on it, hoping that the day finally comes when there's a new governor. And if they're still in charge of the legislature, they'll just give it all away in tax cuts geared toward the primarily wealthy. There have been few more obvious displays that this is a legislature that does not care to govern and serve the bulk of its constituents than one that will let a rainy day fund sit during a pandemic, and one that will not even look at this new piece of legislation and say, you know, I agree with Donald Trump and Elon Musk most of the time, but yeah, if they cross this particular line, we will make up that funding because this is an essential service. And until I hear otherwise, it doesn't sound like there is any service that is so essential that Republicans in Madison would stand up to Donald Trump and protect the way that you are being served. More after this on Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm your handyman. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO. your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
So do farms or nonprofits that have been left in the lurch with unfulfilled contracts from the U.S. Department of Agriculture have any options? I'm PM Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Wednesday. Yes, they do. That's the short answer from Rachel Armstrong. She's an attorney with Farm Commons. Today, she is holding a special virtual seminar to try to give some pointers to farms and nonprofits that are holding contracts with the U.S. Department of Agriculture that have not been financially fulfilled. She said the process is fairly straightforward. Her first suggestion, call the USDA office where the contract originated and try to find out what's going on. She says it's very important that you get these details and responses in writing. And once you've gotten the answer, maybe it's time for an appeal.
That sounds very heavy. We know that that's a legal word, but USDA has something called the National Appeals Division, which is a fairly straightforward process to start an appeal. And it really does involve writing a letter saying, I want to appeal this decision. And the decision can be that you didn't pay my invoice. You know, you clearly seem to have decided not to pay my invoice because nothing has happened. You've, you know, decided not to reimburse me. And I'm going to appeal that process.
Rachel Armstrong, an attorney with Farm Commons, she said they've received a lot of calls from farms and nonprofits trying to figure out what to do next. They've got great resources that they're always updating on their website, farmcommons.org.
Stephens Group has been in the business of marketing farm construction, transportation equipment, and farm real estate at public auction for over 60 years. With locations across the Midwest and Rocky Mountain region, our team is readily equipped to handle any of your auction needs. Sell with confidence, knowing that our team of professionals prioritizes honesty, integrity, and outstanding service. Visit StephensGroup.com to find a representative near you and discuss your options for selling with Stephens today. StephensGroup.com, S-T-E-F-F-E-S Group.com.
Loss of appetite, drop in milk production, and dehydration are all key indicators of HPAI, or bird flu. This disease is a threat to cattle health and farmers' bottom line. Help protect your herd and reduce the spread by keeping animals hydrated and eating with BioVet. Bovine Gold Light provides key electrolytes for livestock, and our direct-fed microbial products support digestive health and appetite. Learn more at bile-vet.com.
Innovation, that's BioVet.
And while there might be challenges with USDA grants, the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection has announced that 9 projects have received approval for $800,000 in funding to optimize nitrogen use in farm fields. All the details available now at MidwestFarmReport.com. That's just a quick snapshot on food news for now. I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Partly cloudy and warmer today. We'll get to around 51 for a high this afternoon. The wind, southeast at 5 to 15. Tonight, partly cloudy, 29. Tomorrow, 60. By Friday, partly cloudy, 65. With rain Saturday, rain changing to snow Saturday night into Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now, 30.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
What do you think about Donald Trump firing 80,000 employees of the VA? Steve from Madison, also a veteran. I'm hearing from one of our conservative texters saying it's okay because it saves money.
How does it save money if it kills people? I mean, how many suicides are there amongst veterans? How many of our seniors need health care? I mean, you take away money from us and it kills us. That's what it does.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Farm Rescue makes sure that you aren't alone. They're there to extend the hand and to take the burden.
Even the most independent farmers need help sometimes, and asking for that help is protecting the future. Farm Rescue provides equipment and volunteers free of charge to assist in times of crisis. We're currently accepting applications for planting and haying assistance. If you or someone you know could use our help, call 701-252-2017 or visit farmrescue.org.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Brad Schimmel says he'll be on the Wisconsin Supreme Court to support Donald Trump's agenda. Deb Crown Miller joins us from the League of Women Voters. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
One more from Al Jarreau, who was born this day in Milwaukee in 1940. You can catch our history lesson every weekday morning at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. Here in our Wednesday homeroom segment that we do each week, originally this segment was where we were going to be introducing Brittany Kinzer. She's a candidate for state superintendent of public instruction. Due to a scheduling request, they asked to move to Friday. So if you tuned in for that, tune in on Friday at 7:30, and we will talk to Brittany Kinzer. Our usual week in review panel that you'd hear at that time with Mark Jacob, Jennifer Schulze, and Jim Santel, they will clock in just a little bit earlier and appear just after the 7 o'clock news on Friday morning. So first half hour will be our panel, and then Brittany Kinzer at 7:30 talking more about her run against incumbent state superintendent Jill Underley to run the Department of Public Instruction. So education is going to be one of the topics that we cover this evening in Madison for our event at the Overture Center, Protecting Justice for All. There will be panels on education, reproductive health care rights, and the economy. It'll run from 5 until 7, and that includes here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can tune in and give a listen to what lawmakers, experts, and others have to say about these areas. I would note as we get into the education area that our state's historic role as a leader in ensuring that every child can get a free, quality public education is truly rooted in America's public education movement itself. It is an outgrowth of the wishes of our nation's founders and others who believed that democracy, which was still a rather fragile concept, could more firmly take root with the consent of voters who were literate and productive and curious, the things that come with an education, and it would move us ever closer to fulfilling the notion. We always talk about how all men are created equal, all people are created equal, all children are created equal. So let's provide them an equal opportunity to learn and flourish. And I always hate that I have to do this every time. But when we talk about being created equal and equal opportunity, again, do not confuse that for equal outcomes. We're not talking about guaranteeing equal outcomes. People still have to do the work. People still have to study. But there's no reason why, no reason why, you wouldn't ensure that every child has an equal opportunity to go to a school that is good, that is safe, that their families can afford, and get that chance to make something of themselves. But America's self-fulfilling prophecy of enlightenment and voter franchise and civic engagement, that's all under attack like rarely, if ever, before, in part by those who would like to see education returned to a different era. Education only for those families privileged enough to have a choice of going to school and where to go to school. Families privileged enough to have the means with which to pay tuition or rely on the charity of others. Or maybe families who would rather be cloistered in a religion of their parents' choosing and get only that religious education. Or those who feel that an academic education isn't something that is necessary for every child and for every person. It's more of a luxury to be pursued only by those who refuse to follow a more vocational course. There are plenty of people that would like to see more children simply go from basic reading and writing into a trade and all that other fancy book learning stuff they don't need unless they want to pay for it. This isn't hyperbole, folks. We have seen plenty of other nations begin backsliding with governments that embrace authoritarianism. They do so under the guise of protecting freedom of speech when they actually mean freedom of speech for their own supporters only. These are places that work to undermine freedom of speech for their critics. They put lessons are under suspicion. You can't teach about this concept. You can't teach about this part of our history. Entire areas of study are criticized by their own government. You saw that yesterday in our own state capitol with a state legislator who wanted to, again, criticize diversity, equity, and inclusion. And, of course, its counterpart, critical race theory, both of which the meanings have been twisted into something grotesquely different than the original definition and intent. It's to the point where troublesome words and phrases are discouraged or banned. And the same goes for certain books. And university instructors end up on watch lists in some of these countries. One need only look at places, you know, like Hungary, for example, run by an authoritarian that loves Donald Trump and Donald Trump loves him. And Viktor Orban came to power in part by attacking the liberal media and liberal educational institutions and used that as a guise to hound and silence critics, arrest some of them, and cause many others to flee. They still do have, quote-unquote, democratic elections in Hungary and in similar countries, but they're not real choices for the voters. And it all begins, in many ways, by attacking public education as something elitist or flawed. Public education is flawed in this state to this measure. Once again, on April 1st, we will see another 91 school spending referendums. 91 more, on top of the hundreds that we've seen the past couple of years. Because of a legislature that has been controlled by Republicans now for 15 years. And for 16 years, this legislature has not allowed state aid to keep up with inflation. So districts fall further and further behind in terms of state aid as it compares to their costs. And so they have to turn to local property taxpayers to make up the difference, to pick up the load from a lazy legislature that does not want to do its share. And instead, we have legislators who are saying that our public schools are failing and who have now started paying for a second school system in Wisconsin, the voucher program, also known as school choice, although there's not a choice for every family in Wisconsin. A school choice program, a parent choice program, that now costs north of $700 million a year. It's approaching $1 billion of taxpayer money a year going to private, mostly religious schools. It's not hyperbole to look toward a time when the only schools available are either run by churches or for-profit corporations. That's the path that some people would take us on, and they would continue to appeal to political bodies like a state Supreme Court if it were to be run by ideologues who would protect their view of what education should be. So there will be a lot said about education at tonight's Supreme Court forum, because whether it is about the state's voucher program or whether it's about the challenge to Act 10 that removed rights from public sector employees, this next state Supreme Court will have a tremendous amount of influence on the future of education in Wisconsin, as well as reproductive health care rights, as well as education. But before I leave the subject of education and referendums, I do want to note that it's not just school referendums that'll be on the ballot April 1st. There are more than 24 other referendums at the municipal or town or county level for various things. Some of them are more like combining local offices or appointments, but several others are to exceed state-imposed revenue limits because they, like school districts, cannot keep up with the cost of providing services when a lazy legislature fails to do its share. There will also be a statewide referendum for voter ID on the ballot yet again, And yet again, it is a measure that is not necessary. It is meant to target immigrants and try to, again, get people to appeal to the lesser angels of their nature when it comes to who should have the right to vote and whether voting should be a right rather than a privilege, as some people want to make it. So those things will be on the ballot as part of an election that includes the state Supreme Court race. And so as we talk about education tonight, Todd Alba will be moderating that particular panel discussion. And joining us will be Julie Mead, who is the retired UW-Madison School of Education professor of education law. We will hear from our friend Heather Dubois-Bourinon from the Wisconsin Public Education Network. Peggy Wirtz-Olson from the Wisconsin Education Association Council, or WEAC, and Representative Christian Phelps of Eau Claire, who before becoming a legislator last November, also was part of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. So a good discussion is going to take place there, and that will be the first one. Then we'll work to the second panel, and each one will last about 25 minutes or so, and then a quick break while people change chairs. The next panel will be about having a Wisconsin economy that works. And my shorthand for it is pretty simple. How do we prevent the Wisconsin Supreme Court from once again becoming just a subsidiary of big business, of WMC and other business groups and the very wealthy? There are decisions that a Supreme Court can make that will determine, for example, if state agencies with your tax dollars can help find areas where our drinking water is contaminated by industrial chemicals called PFAS. Can the area be remediated? And most importantly, for the purposes of our discussion, if the polluters still exist, can you go after them and recoup some of the cost from having to clean up their mess? It's something Republicans in this legislature have been blocking. They have been protecting corporate polluters for about 2 years now and hoping for a state Supreme Court that will back them up on it. Dan Schaefer will moderate our panel on the economy, and we will be joined by State Representative Francesca Hong, State Representative Supreme Moore Omukundi, our friend Melissa Baldoff, who does our climate check segment, and Joe Zepecki, who is a former staffer for the Small Business Administration, as well as a political strategist. They're going to talk all about how a state Supreme Court can make decisions that impact things like job creation, everyday affordability, justice for workers and consumers, safety in the workplace, and of course, mitigating the effects of a changing climate. And then our third discussion will be about how reproductive rights are on the ballot. And we know this. We've heard all about an arcane 1849 state statute that, and again, if you haven't read it, take a look at it. Look at how it is not written in, I mean, it's English, but language changes over time. Read it and tell me if it's clear to you what it's about. When I read it the first time, I said, this seems much more like it's about somebody who, for example, is upset that a wife or a girlfriend got pregnant and literally tries to beat them to the point where the fetus dies. And a Dane County judge has since agreed, has looked at that language and said, yeah, this is about protecting women and fetuses from that, not an elective abortion as part of a woman's decision on what to do with her body for health care. So that case is still in the courts. It's going to work its way to the state Supreme Court. That and other decisions that a state Supreme Court can essentially put in a ban on abortion care and restrict further things like IVF and the ways that women and families can control their own health care decisions. I'll be moderating that panel with Michelle Velasquez of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, Dr. Eliza Bennett, an obstetrician gynecologist, Senator Kelda Royes of Madison, and Heather Martell of Chippewa Falls, who has shared her own abortion care story and the reason why this needs to be protected to help couples who want to have children after troubled pregnancies. Tune in tonight on Civic Media from 5 to 7. Todd Alba's up next. You're up north.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio WXCO, home of the Big High School Sports Show.
Revel in the soul of New Orleans and the spirit of Mardi Gras with the latest Jazz at Lincoln Center Presents concert celebrating the New Orleans Songbook. Led by acclaimed pianist Luther S. Allison and featuring the soulful vocals of Keanu Linnell and Milton Suggs, this concert celebrates the legendary composers and timeless songs that define the Crescent City. New Orleans Songbook, coming to the Grand Theater Wausau Friday, March 21st. Tickets at grandtheater.org.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Folks, we've got to talk about Derek Van Orden. The second-term congressman representing Wisconsin's 3rd District is at it again, dodging public meetings and making all kinds of unhinged comments. As many scramble and struggle to understand the chaos of what's happening in Washington, D.C., and how it's impacting people here in Wisconsin, Van Orden has been as frustrating and disrespectful as ever. In one instance, Van Orden took to social media to berate a veteran who had been fired from his job at the VA by Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. And the veteran in question is simply someone who was just reaching out to his congressman, looking for answers. Van Orden's office has also hastily canceled public meetings, and he has made some especially wild accusations about people who have been attending these public events. Congressman Van Orden needs to stop this unhinged madness, and more importantly, be more available and accountable to his constituents.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Full Falls Radio, WXCO.
On this day in 2007, Van Halen was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But we actually picked this tune because in an alternative world, this song would have been used to introduce the great and powerful Todd Alba and the Todd Alba radio show.
All hail but Todd! All we hail Todd!
We decided not to go with this Van Halen tune because the intro is very long and the show would be half over by the time it was done.
The more appropriate intro music would be from Wicked. I'm limited. I'm limited.
Stop.
I don't like it when Todd makes one of himself.
Mr. Alba joins us now. How are you?
Well, it's a sunny day down here in Madison, and the fire trucks are at the city limits along with the police cars, waiting to give Pat Kreitlow a welcome into town. Yeah, just like when the state championship teams come back. And, we always love it when you come on down.
Let's make clear, if I ever am on the road and I realize I'm coming upon a group of police cars and fire trucks and a whole escort like that, it's not taking me into town to a parade. It's taking me to a re-education camp. I am preparing myself for that day. And hopefully, as they block me at the Canadian border, making my escape to Saskatchewan. But anyway,
Jim Neighbors is now my ringtone on my phone. Oh, Canada,
Jim Neighbors. There's a callback. Wow,
kids, ask your peepaw.
Hey, you are going to be. Now, wait a minute. I just cuddle it. Greg's lost the hoodie. He's got the T-shirt. What's the T-shirt say? My what?
My dog.
My dog thinks I'm cool. Yeah. That's adorable. I love that.
Aw, yeah. That's cool.
Mr. Alba will be joining us as one of the moderators, along with Dan Schaefer, for tonight's panel discussion. Dan Schaefer will be doing the one on the economy. I will be doing the one on reproductive rights. You, sir, will be doing the one on the state of education and how a Supreme Court composition could impact education one way or another. I asked you to do this because I believe you have a family history that tells me that you are just a little bit passionate about education in Wisconsin. How do you plead?
Guilty as charged, Your Honor. Okay. Guilty as charged. Yeah, I mean, it's something that I am passionate about. I come from an entire family of educators, as you guys well know. My sister and brother-in-law are both teachers in the Eau Claire School District, and my dad is a longtime educator, now retired. My mom was a kindergarten teacher for almost 25 years and now retired. And it all started with my maternal grandmother, Marge Wallace, who was born in a farm, in a farmhouse in southwest Wisconsin. And my great-grandparents were farmers, and my great-grandfather, a full-blooded Bohemian directly from the old country, did not believe that girls really needed an education beyond eighth grade. And so my grandma, being the stubborn Bohemian that she was, said, "I don't agree." And she left home at 14 and moved into the big city of about 1,000 people in Muscogee at the time in southwest Wisconsin. Finished her high school education, graduated from Platteville, graduated from UW-Madison with graduate degrees, ended up starting her education while getting those graduate degrees in a one-room schoolhouse, and finished her career as the first woman to be a dean of a UW system college at UW-Richland. And her really devotion of her life to, I mean, she was going to Milwaukee and recruiting young Black people from Milwaukee to come to Richland Center in the 70s. You know, not exactly a lot of people were doing that. And she did it for two reasons. She said, number one, I can basically get you through scholarships a much more affordable education in Richland Center with smaller class sizes and help you achieve your dreams. And she believed innately that it also benefited a predominantly white Richland Center to have some form of diversity and people from other walks of life in other parts of Wisconsin bring their experience to enrich our small town of 5,000 people. And it did. And unfortunately, we don't have to go into the gory details, but again, combination of Republicans in the legislature under funding and Jay Rothman and his galley of ghouls at UW system not wanting to listen to the local people, Richland Center, and the poor leadership at the time at UW Platteville. They closed that two-year university along with, now I believe, five others across the state. So I think we're at a time when both higher education and again, well, Pat and I can save our disputes for another day, but I firmly believe that Republicans are more at fault for not paying attention to what's going on at our university levels. And from being a former Republican, I saw firsthand there is an attack on K-12 and higher education by my former party, the Republicans of the state. But it also concerns me and quite frankly frustrates me that our education governor, a guy who was a three-time elected DPI secretary of Wisconsin, just seems to be aloof about what's happening in our universities and Governor Evers. So, you know, I'll be on my best behavior because I don't want to have any, I don't want to be thrown out of the event tonight. But I hope to ask, you know, a couple of pointed questions to everybody on the panel. And this isn't about me or anybody else as a moderator tonight, but I really hope it's about listening to people who are in education and sussing out facts. And more importantly, maybe, how do we move forward and what opportunities are there? I happen to believe that one of those opportunities is re-electing Jill Underly to the DPI superintendent race and move from there.
We'll look forward to those questions on, again, the impact that a state Supreme Court can have on this issue, about which Mr. Alba is so rightly passionate. Todd, I will hit the road here and see you in just a little while for your show, and then again this evening.
Safe travels, Pat. Now, what is it that you wanted me to greet you with at the door? The Driftless Glen Bourbon Whiskey or the Woodward Reserve? I forget.
Let's wait till after the event. Maybe after the event we'll talk about that. Thank you, Todd. Greg is back.
A list of things that have to be given to him when he arrives.
Greg is back for Matt and Aaron Air. Yes, the M&Ms, please. I insist. Enjoy your day. Tune in tonight at 5, and we'll see you tomorrow morning up north.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, Wausau's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Pete Schwaba.
Our next live broadcast is Thursday, where I welcome Mary Mack, who will make the popcorn pick of the week. And then comedian Rob Brackenridge joins me in the studio. Always fun.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Matt and Air on Air.
Will Westmoreland is joining us now. He is a farmer in southwestern Missouri.
This is an 80-20 Republican area down here. You can't throw a rock without hitting a Republican. And I still know all the guys I graduated with. So I always ask, don't admit you were wrong. Just admit you were lied to. That's a lot easier to do. If you just admit you were lied to, you can get over here with us and start working to fight the problem.
Matt Nair on air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're listening to Bull Falls Radio, WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Education Secretary Linda McMahon tells Fox her department is cutting more than 1,300 jobs, almost half its staff.
Clearly, we're not taking away education. The president never said that. He's taken the bureaucracy out of education so that more money flows to the states. Better education is closest to the kids.
President Trump's 25% tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports are now in effect. CBS's Weijia Jiang reports the European Union is retaliating.
The EU announced plans to impose counter tariffs on about $28 billion worth of U.S. goods starting in April, saying it must act to protect consumers and businesses.
CBS's Manuel Bojorquez reports police in the Dominican Republic have named a person of interest in the disappearance of University of Pittsburgh spring breaker Sudiksha Kananki.
National Police spokesperson Diego Pesqueira said authorities cannot yet determine if Kananki's disappearance is the result of an accident or foul play.
Kananki has been missing since last Thursday. CBS News Brief. I'm Michael Wallace.